Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Staying in.
No,
oh.
I'm just gonna make sure.
Oh yeah.
No, I'm recording.
Oh, you don't need to, because it's not going anywhere.
Pod Save the King.
Hello and welcome back to Pod Save the King. I am your host, Anne Gripper. Our king has been crowned alongside his queen Camilla, and my regular friend Russell Myers is having a little lie down in a dark room for a few weeks. So I've gone for the big boss, the Queen of the Mirror. Daily Mirror editor Alison Phillips is joining us today. Alison, lovely to see you.
Morning, Anne. Thank you very much for having me.
Long-time listeners to the podcast will know that you were on a few years ago in the before times before the pandemic. But yes, it's great to have you on today because you had one of the top tickets in town on Saturday. You were in Westminster Abbey.
I was. And it was a huge privilege. It was the most extraordinary experience. And I don't suppose any of us ever imagined that one day we might actually sit in the room where a king is crowned. And so to have had that opportunity was wonderful. I was there. Every news organisation, every major news organisation had one ticket. And then people within that news organisation had to agree or fight or arm wrestle.
Or play the boss card.
Well, so this one was between obviously us and the Express and the Star. But after some negotiations, I got the ticket and it was incredible, really.
Russell did still get to go as well, though. He got a separate royal ticket, I guess.
He was there sort of really working and watching. I think he had a much better view than I did. So the bit of the Abbey that I was in, if you go into Westminster Abbey, there's a huge wooden
There's a screen where you saw Charles and Camilla walk through up into the sort of the real heart and of Westminster Abbey, and it completely cuts
the Abbey in two. So if you're in the bottom half, which I was, you can't really see... Well, you can't see anything at the top half, but they did have screens up in the bottom of the Abbey. So I was watching it on a screen, possibly without all the close-ups that you got if you're watching on television at home. So you were watching it sort of longer shots. But what was incredible is you saw them all process into the Abbey and then you saw them all process out again afterwards.
And you had some nice neighbours.
Yeah, well, one of the really funny things I thought about, so I arrived and I'm never knowingly early for anything. And then when I got there, the people that were guiding everybody in said, oh, there's no seating plan in this area. You just have to go and grab a chair. And I found a chair and I was about four rows from the aisle. And of course that was still only at 8:30 and bear in mind, it didn't kick off till 11. So there was still another 2.5 hours until it all began. But then about another hour or so after I arrived, I was sat there and I heard somebody sort of plump into the seat behind me and it was a very American voice going, "Hi, I'm Katie." And it's all these sort of like slightly stunned people in the row. And I looked over my shoulder and it was Katy Perry, which was just incredible.
Brilliant. I think Princess Charlotte would probably rather have had your seat, judging by the way she was singing along at the concert on Sunday night.
Sweet. Yeah.
She looked like she was absolutely loving Katy Perry's performance. And I think Katy Perry on Sunday night probably had more gold than the whole of the coronation.
That was a fantastic dress, yes.
It was a showstopper. More of the concert later, I'm sure. So you had a very early start in the Abbey. Was anybody allowed to go to the loo after they arrived?
Well, I think they were discouraging that. I think that there were toilets there for people that wanted to use them. But when you came, I mean, the most extraordinary thing was you came in via Lambeth Bridge and then they had a big security sort of tent where you had to sort of show your passport and that you were who you were. And then we went through like airport style scanners. But what was really funny at that point, it was when you're sort of looking around and you could see this incredible sort of selection of people. There was Emma Thompson, the actress, Judi Dench, Maggie Smith. So these huge, huge sort of characters. You know, Emma Thompson going into the Portaloos that they put up before you actually got to the Abbey. And then you'd have like Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer. And then next to him, there was Rory Stewart, the broadcaster and politician. So there was a really interesting selection of people all together and all very excited.
And when you were in the Abbey, like how did it, I guess, how did it feel in terms of the congregation and the modern and the, because you sort of got this weird mix of like, you know, establishment and aristocracy and faith and
yes,
posh, you know, posh people, and then you were aunt and dad.
It
and
really
you.
Felt there was like a lot of very normal people, which I know was the intention, and I think that really worked, certainly in the area that we were, you know, to downstream of the big screen, that it was very much people who'd done incredible things, maybe volunteers through the Prince's Trust. People around me had done things like cooking for those in need during COVID. Somebody else had worked with underprivileged youngsters. And I was sat next to this lovely couple who'd come down from Scotland. And the lady was born in Tuvalu, the island in the Pacific, which is part of the Commonwealth, but had been living in Scotland for the last 20-odd years. And they were there to represent the people of those Pacific islands. So it was a really... And then, of course, and then you have got Anton Deck and Lionel Richie and Katy Perry. So it was... But that, I thought, was the most lovely piece about it. And that really did feel like a diverse group of people with all sorts of different backgrounds and interests. And I also think the thing about not really having a seating plan was genius, because then you haven't got the idea about, oh, such a body's in front of them and they're more important than somebody else. It was this idea that everybody is equally welcome and equally a guest of the king. And I thought that was a really nice touch.
Obviously, somewhere where there was a seating plan was up front, yes, with the royals. Harry in the cheap seats. I mean, Andrew, who knows where he was?
Yes.
Didn't go so well. I mean, how did you feel about the Andrew and Harry thing? Did they people get noticed? Was there sort of a rustle when they came in? Because, like, to me, fine, Andrew got booed on the way in, but I didn't notice him. I mean, fair play. I was watching the coronation with a toddler.
Yes.
So, again, in the same way that you couldn't necessarily see, yes, a lot, my view was sometimes limited, although she did love the horses. Hiya! Oh. Hiya! To the TV and conducting along during Zabot.
Oh, that's
the
good.
Priest
enjoyed
as well.
And enjoyed the music.
She enjoyed the music and the helicopters for the flypast as well. But, you know, the sort of Harry came in with the cousins who he's still sort of most matey with, and then sort of disappeared. He was sort of a bit part, which is probably how it was meant to be.
Yes, I think so. I think so. Andrew was there in the ceremonial robes that I think at one point we thought he wasn't going to wear. So I thought that was kind of interesting that he was allowed to wear those. I tell you one thing I did notice was when they were all leaving the Abbey and Harry was standing on his own, because obviously there was quite a few couples, so Eugenie and her husband, Beatrice and her husband, and so he was obviously on his own. And so you've got to imagine at that point, he's walking through the bit where you've got more kind of just normal people who've got the invite. And particularly the men, actually, I felt really were giving him really hard stares. And some of them were really, it felt actually a little bit hostile. And then Harry looked down and was looking down at his towards his feet, and I actually at that point felt quite sorry for him, because I thought he would have been aware that these were kind of the more the masses. I mean, you know, not the masses, but more of the masses, and that must have been quite an uncomfortable sensation for him.
And then rapid departure, so you know, there was no real opportunity for him to interact with the other members of the family, who were rather busy with other things.
But then I guess if this is a stepping stone back towards rebuilding relationships rather than the whole thing, maybe that's how you do it. It's little steps by little steps. And the fact that he showed up, I think, was good. And the fact that there is now a basis from which they can build back their relationship. Whereas if he hadn't come, I think that would have been quite a statement.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as well, when you're on the other side of the world, you can't just pop round for a cup of tea and have that sort of little first step very easily.
Yeah. And I imagine it would be a very, very long process.
So when Charles and Camilla and the grand procession walked in, you know, obviously I also got to see the close-ups of him walking down the aisle, and I was like, oh, what kind of face should you be using as you're walking down the aisle?
Yes.
Like, you know, at a wedding, you're probably either super happy and smiley, which was me, or super emotional, which was my dad. But, you know, what should you be expressing? Are you happy? I'm taking on this role, but you don't want to look too smug at being the king, and you're only doing this role because your mum's dead, and it's very, very weird.
Yeah,
and
I completely agree with that. I think it was quite strange, in that Charles and Camilla both looked incredibly serious, and I suppose it is a really serious business being crowned. But I thought, so when you do go to a wedding, so this was what I think was kind of strange about the whole thing. We understand the process of weddings because we've all been to them, and we understand the process of funerals because we've all been to them. But with the coronation, no one quite knows where that fits in the whole process. And it was very serious throughout. So you know that perhaps at a wedding there might be some giggles at the bit where they exchange rings and nobody can find the ring, and then the priest will make a little joke or whatever. There was no levity, I didn't think, in the whole thing at any point. There was never a point where anybody sort of... There was an occasional smile, but there's certainly not a laugh. This was a serious business throughout. And I thought Charles looked sort of serious / terror struck when he was walking. And he also, I think, I felt, looked really quite frail, which is something I'd never thought about it regarding him before. But I think it was the cloaks and the weight of the cloaks and the layers. But then maybe that is part of the point, in that he's a man who is bearing this great weight of what he's about to do. He definitely looks sort of very small inside those cloaks.
I thought that came through actually in the Hugo Bernan portraits as well, and sort of the difference between the young queen looking sort of majestic and powerful. I thought he did look a little bit... he could have had done with his tunic being straightened out a bit, or a bit sort of slouchy.
Yeah.
Like it was, I don't know, almost like relaxing after a day, but sort of feeling a bit awkward
somehow. It did feel a huge weight, and he seems very small inside it. But then I think it probably is a huge weight, and the crown is obviously incredibly heavy in all senses of that word.
I think the other thing, I mean, this is, thinking about it, I should have realised, the ceremony was so religious, like far more religious than I had kind of imagined. And last week on the podcast, I was talking about how weird it was to be saying, "May the king live forever." And then you're watching it and you realise, like, well, you're not talking about "May the king live forever" in this life.
No.
You're talking about "May the king live forever with God," essentially, and go to heaven.
I mean, incredible. Again, sort of like you say, perhaps we should all have realised this in advance, but it was incredibly religious. Super religious and super serious, and that was the bit that I think I found, and I'm not anti-religious in any way, shape or form, but what I sort of found challenging in some regards is that it's not just a very religious service, a very Church of England, a very Protestant. So this was all about the relationship between the Church of England and one man. And that was kind of the strange thing, because in many ways it was an incredibly diverse service in terms of the people who had roles, you know, the people who sang, the people who brought the gifts to him, and the attendees. It was very, very diverse. But on the other hand, it was perhaps the least diverse thing I have ever been to, in that it was hardcore Church of England and a king. And so I think what's sort of challenging and interesting to think about is that this is all about a God, which, you know, many people in this country no longer believe in, and a king, which many people in this country have got serious questions about. And the idea that the king is being anointed by God. So in a way, you're kind of thinking, sort of looking around and thinking, but how many people, if you drill down to this, actually believe that this is actually all true? Probably quite a small number. But then that's faith, isn't it? But we're all going along with it. We're all buying into this as a thing, even though if you broke it down to constituent parts, I don't know how many people believe in it.
It did all feel quite weird, and I there were various bits that felt quite weird. And, you know, having our Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who is a practicing Hindu, so brilliant, diverse, but he's having to read a very biblical text. It made me feel, I don't know, the sort of, there's a bit of he's saying words that he fundamentally doesn't believe.
I completely agree.
And he's been put in a position where he probably feels like he ought to do it.
And he had to. I completely agree. So Rishi Sunak was, because I was sort of wedged in underneath the pulpit to the point where I could see when Rishi Sunak went up to do the reading, I could sort of see his, like, could smell the shoe polish on his shoes. I was so close to them. And I felt uncomfortable for Rishi Sunak in that situation, because it wasn't just a Bible reading. It was a particularly, fervent Bible reading. And I just think, have we really asked a practicing Hindu to read something that he doesn't believe in? And surely that's not diverse. That's not diversity, is it? That's not inclusive. That's just saying, right, these are the rules, and if you want to play, you're going to have to play on these terms.
There's so many weird things about it. I thought some things that I did like, Camilla adjusting her hair under the crown. And then there's also that thing of like, oh, I've not clocked. Okay, you are going to have to fit these crowns somehow, because not everybody's got the same head. And the tension of like, are these things going to actually stay on their heads? It's like they're trying to balance pies on.
Yeah, or trying to like sort of like screw in a cork back into a wine bottle when they're trying to get the crown on Charles's head.
And there's one moment where I thought Camilla was folding up her own robes because her sister is such the spitting image of her. So that was lovely. Prince Louis disappearing, which I thought, and then them closing the gap, which was rather fun. Presumably he was going off to avail himself of the facilities in some fashion. I think probably one thing that, whatever you think about the ceremony, did come through was the music.
Oh, beautiful.
Did you have like an enduring concert beforehand? Like how hours of it?
I mean, there was a lot of music in the run-up, but it was just the music was. And the idea that some of that music had been composed for other coronations in history was an amazing. So you've got pieces of music there that everybody knows, and it's sort of been the background to our lives, but they were composed for coronations. And then here we were, and they were being played. And the point where the king was anointed and they brought the screens around him and they played Zadok the priest and the Champions League music, but anyway, but that was just spine tingling. That was just incredible. And then Andrew Lloyd Webber's piece I thought was very good that had been written for it. And there was some interesting new music. I wasn't sure whether there was anything that might last for the next 300 years as some of those pieces that were played, but who knows with time.
It's hard to get into it as well because you've already got so many established bits and you just keep accumulating. Yes. It was interesting seeing the gospel choir.
Oh yeah, they were excellent.
So some of the singers that we'd seen performing at Harry and Meghan's wedding, and actually remembering that it was Charles that had asked that gospel choir to come and sing at Harry and Meghan's wedding.
I didn't realise that. Oh yeah, no,
so
they were
great. Been the one who'd made the contact with them. So having that thread, and again, you know, that might have been a heart pull for
Harry. Yeah, for Harry, he would have remembered
well.
That. Yes. Yeah.
So was that. Camilla's robes with the names embroidered and the dogs, sweet or naff?
Sweet, I think. Sweet.
I can't quite
Are you
decide.
On naff?
I don't know. Well, I was thinking with the dogs earlier and then it was just like, well, I guess that's what you kind of have in your coat of arms and things. You might have a lion or a unicorn. Why wouldn't you have Jack Russells?
I mean, at first I thought about her grandchildren's names being sewn in, because we're so used to just thinking about this as down Charles's side of the family. And I think that's a really nice thing that she did to say, no, actually, my children, my grandchildren, they matter and they're going to be a part of this. And because it'd be quite easy for them to get completely airbrushed out of the whole thing. And because in many regards, it might suit the monarchy just to pretend that Camilla's first life never happened. But I think it's important.
Her ex-husband was there.
I mean, well, that was very interesting because so there was the main aisle that you saw all the people process up. And then there was a sort of a small kind of like tradesman aisle behind us. And so I sat there and I heard some kerfuffle going on and I turned around and there was the ex-husband, Andrew Parker Bowles. And I think there must be some other members of her family, cousins or whatever, I don't know. And they were brought up the side aisle up to that top bit. So obviously not down the central aisle. Although people like Kate Middleton's parents and her brother and sister all went up the main aisle. So
it was interesting seeing them put, you know, they're in really quite prominent places in eyeline, and just thinking, well, actually, Kate we'll be doing this.
Yes.
One day.
Yes, absolutely.
Assuming things carry on their, yeah, on their, yeah, current course, and actually them sort of being there and seeing it. And I've been thinking, so there's bits of the ceremony that were sort of modernised. You got the young child coming up at the beginning to sort of represent, which I thought was a bit of a London 2012 nod, where we had the young people, yes, lighting the flame. But because not many of us remember the previous coronation, it's quite difficult to know, you know, unless you read a lengthy explanation of this is different and that is different, which, you know, we're probably all busy to make. I was too busy making, yes, quiche probably to be doing that. But it's not familiar to us. And maybe also changing too much of it now, yes, we might have felt a bit cheated.
Yes.
Whereas now I feel like, you know, we would assume that William's coronation will be sooner.
Yes.
Than he will have less long to wait, yes, than Charles did to take up that role. It may be easier in some ways to change and modernise it at that stage.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Because, I mean, he did he cut about an hour and a half from the Queen's coronation?
Yeah.
But I kind of think 2 hours was probably enough. And I mean, certainly for a TV audience, it'd be very interesting to know how the viewing figures peaked and troughed within that 2 hours. You know, were there particular bits that people tuned in for? But then this is the whole problem with the monarchy, isn't it? In that if you regard it as a sacred thing, how much can you modernise it without undermining the whole point of it? But then if you don't, I mean, would William go through that whole anointing ceremony? I mean, because that appears to be crucial to the whole thing. But in many ways is perhaps the most anachronistic bit of the whole thing.
It's, yeah, well, with the church and the royal family connected, or whether it just become a private ceremony. But then also thinking, you know, we used to have coronations before the king, as it so often was the head of the church. So before Henry VIII, he, yeah, presumably still have some form of crowning.
And I suppose
going
what
on.
They're worried about is how, if you change too much, then you lose the thing about you that's special and you become just like another celebrity. What's the difference between Posh and Beck's getting married or something like that? You know, you've got to have some bits that are different and special.
It's interesting with the reckoning. The procession afterwards.
Yes.
I mean, you were probably queuing to get out,
was,
I imagine.
I was walking back to the nearest tube, which was about 2 miles away, because everywhere else was shut in ridiculously high heels. So,
but
in the rain.
It was a shame that it was the rain, but the procession was pretty magnificent. And actually, even more than the procession, seeing everybody assembled in the gardens of Buckingham Palace and doing their three cheers with their hats.
It was amazing.
And all of that.
I mean, in terms of spectacle, so people that have said to me, what's my abiding memories? I'd say it's the colours. And so the colours of the outfits, all the military outfits and all the different people who attended. And that was a spectacle. That was something that was just so full of strong imagery. And I mean, the reason all the news organisations did page after page after page of pictures is because they're just amazing images. So that's great. And the other thing that I will always remain with me, I think, is, and this sounds ridiculous thing to say, but it's how sparkly the crowns were. Just so spark, the most sparkly thing I have, the sparkliest of sparkly rings that you've ever seen. It was incredible.
Because, yeah, I don't think that probably came over on TV as much. It sort of looked quite like fancy dress in some ways, and maybe not. And I think that's why, you know, if you ever get to go see the crown jewels in Tower of London, and they are under the lights and sparkling, it does look that extra bit. And we had the balcony moment.
Yes.
So I thought that was interesting how, you know, the way the family, you actually got the attendants were the ones that were there with the king and queen. You sort of got the family off separately. Mm. But actually, that must have been a bit weird as well, because Camilla was having her balcony moment with Charles, which she'd never had after a wedding.
Of course, yes. Because, I mean, some people had said before the event, which I thought was quite interesting, is it almost felt like a wedding and that they were sort of renewing their vows in a way that was very public, because, of course, their actual wedding was very low-key, because at that point it was all still a bit dicey with the British public about whether they would accept Camilla. And there were elements of it that they seemed very much together, just the two of them seemed very much together. And on that balcony, there was that couple of beautiful frames where they're just sort of looking at each other, which was really lovely. But of course, also it was quite, and when the official portraits came out, it's quite a different, it is the slimmed down royal family. It's much tighter.
And there's some fairly elderly members, you know, we see the nice sort of picture of Sophie, you know, Sophie West, like, offering her arm to Princess Alexandra. And, you know, you do, as much as you always used to think the Queen deserved some retirement, I think probably these, you know, long-lived and hardworking people who supported her throughout her reign.
And there is always a great fascination, I think, although I know we talk about a slimmed-down royal family, in terms of just people watching, I think some of those more extended members of the royal family are sort of kind of interesting, I think. And so there's all these, the Windsors and the Michaels. And to be honest, I really wouldn't be able to tell you which one was which, because they've always been there, haven't they, all our lives, hanging around on big occasions somewhere on the sides. And so, and they all got very sort of quite thin faces, and they're all have a look. But they, so they were all there. And it's just interesting to see how they've grown, and Princess Margaret's grandchildren. And I mean, that was just all interesting how those people have grown.
And the royals kind of made the most of the weekend. They were out at the street parties as well, turning up. I mean, that would be a bit of fun.
I have to say, I was slightly surprised we didn't see more of the King and Queen. So we saw them at the concert, didn't we? I sort of thought they'd be popping up here, there and everywhere in subsequent days. But Charles was out yesterday, wasn't he? But we didn't see...
Doing a bit of digging.
I wonder if they do actually find it quite tiring.
I think anybody after, you know, you build yourself up for the big adrenaline event, and then you have the crash thing. So they went back to Highgrave on Saturday night.
Which was interesting again. So they've got, so they have the biggest day of their lives, I guess, as being crowned. And then they've got Buckingham Palace, they've got Windsor Castle, but they chose to go back to Highgrove, which is quite a long drive, isn't it? It's a good couple of hours.
Well, they'd have had the outriders probably that you didn't get on the, on the road on the way in this morning.
A bit quicker. But the idea they went, because I think that is home for them, isn't it? And that's where they can just put their slippers on and watch the telly, I guess.
Just be Chaz and
Cam. Yeah, I guess so.
And what did you make of the concert? Did you watch that one?
I did watch the concert. I thought, I mean, it was disappointing they didn't have just maybe one or two slightly bigger names. I mean, you sort of feel you need a Paul McCartney or a Rod Stewart or a, you know, Adele, just somebody mega star-ish.
I mean, sorry, Katy Perry, she does it for me. She's great.
She was great. She was great.
Lionel Richie.
They are both American, though. Does that matter?
Well, they are. And I did, I'm take that. I had to look up how old they are. They're in their 50s now.
I know. And they sort of...
So I take that.
I know. I kind of think if they'd had Robbie back or some major...
Bit of a surprise. I mean, I can remember being away on my like German exchange when I was at school as a teenager, and he left and there was like wailing happening.
Yeah, so I think
not from me.
Come back, that would have been a moment. So, but all in all, I thought it was great. I thought
the drones were great.
Like, oh, amazing!
The amazing displays. Yeah.
So, and it did also, you know, they had those drones, didn't they, at different points of the United Kingdom. So that felt quite inclusive as well of the different sections of the country.
Quite clever. And then Monday was the big help out, which they're aiming to make an annual type of thing. And
yeah, that's brilliant.
Fantastic pictures of the Cambridges.
Amazing.
At the Scouts. I mean, just spectacular. Charlotte, she's got Futures Made Marion, I think, with that bow and arrow.
She looked brilliant. And then little Louis on the tractor digger thing. And then George, who always seems to be trying really hard, doesn't he, to sort of to do the right thing. So... I mean, that family are born for pictures. They just always look fabulous, don't they?
And they interact so nicely and naturally. And this moment's been shared of like, looks like George is checking out his hair in the car window as he's just getting in, and like Louis munching on his marshmallows and just, oh yeah, and I want to go in the digger. My brother's had to go in. I want to go in with Dad now.
Yeah, it was so great.
A future Challenge Annika hosts maybe. But so that was really lovely. And I can't believe we haven't already mentioned Kate's look and Charlotte's outfit with her sort of mini me and the lovely headdresses. And then it all came together because obviously everybody was wearing those sort of slightly gaudy dressing up robes in the coronation. But when you saw in the portraits, they
beautiful.
Looked and it was all, you know, they were all wearing the white with, it's like when you have a bride with bridesmaids and they've all got the same colour, but different styles on it. And Charlotte with her mini me look and the...
they were lovely. I mean, Kate just looks stunning at all times. Tell you what I thought was interesting about Kate, because when I saw her come into the Abbey, and I don't mean this in a nasty way at all, but her makeup was really thick, which is interesting. It was like in the way that if you ever see somebody on a film set or a TV set, that's proper stage makeup because really to take a great photograph, you need that, because that's why she looks amazing in all the pictures. I mean, she does look incredible. But I thought that was kind of quite interesting. I mean, she knows what she needs to do to look like that good.
For telly and for the photos and close-ups and everything that is going to be coming. But yeah, no, spectacular outfits and a job well done. And then we were back to work at the garden party.
I know. I mean, yeah, I mean, credit to them. That was good. Because I guess there must come a point where they just want a day off as well.
Wow. I think I'd still take it. I think it feels like it's the end of the beginning now. So yes. Charles has been king since his mother died in September. And we've, to a certain extent, been building up to the coronation. And now it's all official, mm-hmm. if you like. And now it feels like, you know, the ongoing conversation to a certain extent has been about the protests and the arrests that mm-hmm. were made at the weekend and the challenges that are to come.
Yes, I mean, there definitely are a lot of challenges ahead, but I feel that this king, I mean, regardless of what you might think about him, what people's opinions of him might be, I do think he's very thoughtful in the sense that he thinks about things a lot. He's not somebody who does things recklessly, or he's quite a serious person by nature. And so I think he's acutely aware of the challenges, particularly around things like future of the Commonwealth, what the royal family, how the royal family is going to be challenged around its wealth, how it's going to remain relevant in modern Britain, how it's going to repair the family issues that we've seen. And also, you know, issues around the royal family's historic relationship with slavery. So I think they're all there in his mind. And I think perhaps far more than a lot of politicians, he is aware that you can't run and hide from any of those issues. They're going to have to be dealt with. I mean, I did think that was another sort of thing that really struck me, was that when the Commonwealth leaders all processed into the Abbey, I couldn't help look at them but think about empire and our country's relationship with empire, because you just can't. And then you start thinking about empire and you think about all the good things, but also a lot of the very bad things that came with empire and the hangover from empire, which sort of remains to this day. And I just don't think we can, as a society, can just box it off as done, as history. I think because the ramifications of it are still with today. But I do think that's something that the king's definitely alive to.
What do you think your predictions would be for when William takes the crown? Will we still have a king, do you think? Do you think he will get to do it?
I think, absolutely. I don't think there's any huge appetite in this country to move on from what the monarchy that we have. In fact, I think, I mean, all the polling that was done last week showed that people like the idea of a slimmed down monarchy. They like the idea of it not costing us too much money, but they like the idea of just, you know, having these sort of figureheads who get wheeled out for special occasions. And people like a party, which is kind of quite a lot of, and it's an event. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of people that are very angry about the cost, and we are in a huge cost of living crisis. And so that is a factor that that annoys people. But then also I think sometimes for people, when life, you know, for all of us can become a bit mundane sometimes, it's good to have events. And I think things like the big help out and the street parties, I mean, there weren't as many as during the Jubilee, but there were some, and that does bring people together and it can have a beneficial effect.
Well, we'll get to see. We'll get to talk about it for, well, months and years, hopefully, on God Save the King. Alison, it's been great to have you join us today, but I think it's only fair that I should give the last word to the King. So this was King Charles III's message at the end of his coronation weekend. He said, "As the coronation weekend draws to a close, my wife and I just wanted to share our most sincere and heartfelt thanks to all those who have helped to make this such a special occasion. We pay particular tribute to the countless people who have given their time and dedication to ensuring that the celebrations in London, Windsor and further afield were as happy, safe and enjoyable as possible. To those who joined in the celebrations, whether at home, at street parties and lunches or by volunteering in communities, we thank you each and every one. To know that we have your support and encouragement and to witness your kindness expressed in so many different ways has been the greatest possible coronation gift, as we now rededicate our lives to serving the people of the United Kingdom, the realms and Commonwealth. So that's it for our coronation episode. We've got a special guest episode next week talking about a very different coronation. And we'll be back before too long with all of the latest royal news. You can keep in touch with us on Instagram at PodSave. But until next time.
Pod Save the King!